irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Dave's Good Vibration Station with Dave Cohen, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Vibration station here on LATalkRadio.com, the world's most listened to internet talk radio station. This is the show where we talk about anything and everything to raise your vibration. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, we have made it another week. Sifting through time and space, but not really. What's up, guys? Welcome to Dave's Good Vibration Station. This is the show where we talk about anything and everything to raise your vibration. Very powerful information and vibration swirling in the studio. Hey guys, if you were here in the studio with us, you would see all the colors everywhere, sparkling biophoton emissions to my left, to my right, up and down. I'm just playing around. What's up, guys? I'm your host, Davey, and this is the show where we raise your vibration. As you know, every single week, we are inspired. We bring people, and sometimes, a lot of the time, reoccurring individuals on the show that have very tuned in wisdom, powerful knowledge that I feel and many others could influence this world in a very positive way. That is why I like to bring in none other than the one and only Bruce Rawls. How are you doing, my brother, my friend? It is a pleasure, to say the least, to always have you here on the show. Author, creator of GeometryCode.com, BruceRawls.com. He is a man of many trades, and an extremely wise, to say the least, individual. Welcome, Bruce, once again to the show. How are you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing great, and I'm always a bit overwhelmed by the introduction, but I appreciate your kindness. And I should just put the disclaimer that all that you've said is applicable to all of us, and I think that's something that we can dive into. We talked about going chapter by chapter through this book that I put together, because I think there's some useful ideas,
to say the least.
And it's really about the idea. It starts off with the first chapter of this Geometry Code book, which is not really a misnomer, but it's sort of a more of a backdrop than a foreground idea of geometry, because I think geometry is one of many symbolic systems that we can use to look at the world that we live in, and
Absolutely.
More importantly, the ideas that make up the world.
Absolutely.
And I think even the most casual observer will notice that everything that we see in the world, whether it is a human manufactured object or something that occurs in nature or whatever, they all begin as ideas.
Yes.
And the mind, it really is primary. And then in the second chapter in this book, which we could get to in the next session, modern physics basically corroborates that for centuries the idea of the Newtonian model was that we could just kind of go along and be puppets in a billiard ball model of the universe, of the cosmos, that suggested that we're at the mercy of whatever seems to be happening around us. And on the level of form,
yes,
that's as a first approximation, that's you know, relatively accurate in terms of what seems to be going on around us.
Right, right.
But the inner realms, the realm of thought and mind and awareness is wasn't even part of that equation.
Exactly.
So it's just boggling to think of the implications that physics essentially almost a century ago, many decades ago now, essentially affirmed the idea that our awareness, the mind with which we get the feedback from the physical world,
yes,
is primary. And that's kind of staggering, really.
And
what it really means is that we do have a choice in our experience, not necessarily what happens through our senses directly, but indirectly, we have a mechanism by which we can change what our experience is on the level of thought.
Right.
And that's why I thought it would be good to start this book off with which has another background theme of the seven hermetic laws, which comprise the last seven chapters of the book, which is the geometry code. And this was something that a book that I ran across several decades ago, but it actually came out over a century ago in 1912.
Oh, wow.
And I timed the release of this book to basically be the 100th anniversary of
wow.
The Kabbalion, which is a wonderful little book. You can actually find it online in its entirety. It's not a very long book. It's, 60, 70, 80 pages if you read it. You can read it in an afternoon if you have that much time. as we were discussing before we went on the air.
Yes.
Who has time to read anymore?
No.
Other than sound bites and little bits of things. But,
totally.
But if you find yourself having time, it's a really interesting read. And so what this book was really was inspired by originally was to basically do an updated review of these seven hermetic laws, but then
yes.
I realized, well, in the process of formulating these ideas over a number of years, I realized, well, I kind of got back into the non-dual metaphysics that I had stumbled upon in the mid-80s and returned to about 8 years ago after reading Gary Renard's book, The Disappearance of the Universe, and it led me back to the non-dual metaphysics of A Course in Miracles and that whole realm of thought that says that mind is really primary, and we have an opportunity to look at that every time we 24/7, 365, really.
Yes.
Every time we have
a
feeling or a thought or a judgment or an assessment that makes anything in the material world have power over us.
Right.
We're basically choosing a thought system
100%.
That puts us at the mercy of what seems to be going on around us.
Exactly.
And I think a lot of the ancient wisdom centers around the idea that that's one option, but it's not the only option.
But it's not the only option. Exactly.
And that is where incredible freedom lies. And that's I think the whole premise of this book is that there isn't just one thought system that we all have all these variations of. There's really two distinct thought systems.
Yes.
The one that we hang out in most of the time, certainly since Freudian psychology and this spiritual masterpiece that is known as A Course in Miracles that I've been an avid student of again for having discovered it three or four decades ago,
yes.
Three I guess it was, and then picking it up again eight years ago, realized that wow, there's just a lot of amazing stuff in here,
yeah.
That I kind of glossed over the first time.
Yes,
and
yes.
The ideas that it suggests are that our minds can actually be transformed,
right,
to the point where if we can forgive ourselves for having made up a dream, we can become free of that dream.
Wow.
So I think that and it's, at first blush it sounds, well, okay, sure, that's cool. So what? And then
But
I don't think we, you know, typically fathom the depths and really ponder the implications
exactly.
that if this world
exactly
And again, that's why I kind of in the second chapter kind of tie into the modern physics implications that support this. If this world is really either an interpretation of our senses and is subject to the filtering and the distortion and the modification of the raw data that comes in through our senses.
Yes.
That then puts us over a barrel if we buy into that, and we're all very heavily invested.
Yes.
All hands in the room raise.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because, I mean, that's how we set it up. That's how we set up this Matrix world. And I think there's a lot of virtual reality films, the Matrix series being one of them, Truman Show another, Inception another great film. But there's, you know, these gems from now and time to time that come along that remind us that this is a virtual reality film here.
Absolutely.
And it's basically a massive hologram that we are projecting collectively.
Yes.
That we obviously need to deal with. I mean, it's not suggesting that we, you know, suddenly take your hands off the steering wheel if you realize the Eastern mystical idea that the world's an illusion. It's like, no, you probably still want to keep your hands on the wheel and make all the turns you were going to make and
exactly
signal appropriately. And, you know,
you just start pivoting in the direction that you prefer as opposed to, you know, being influenced by what's around you. You know,
I mean, it's kind of the best of both worlds in the sense that we get to enjoy what's in the world, but if you're not taking it quite so seriously,
exactly,
that frees you up to not be at the mercy of what appears to be going on at any given moment in time and space and the coordinates that we so firmly believe that we're at.
It's so true. And the interesting thing, Bruce, is that literally, I mean, you can ask anybody on the planet, right? Well, we'll say almost anybody on the planet. And, you know, you can ask them, you know, you can ask them about their past. You can ask them what they've experienced. You can ask them how it's affected them as a person, right? Then you can ask them about their present moment. You can say, you know, what are you experiencing now? Well, oh, I can feel the wind on my face, or I can hear the cars on the beautiful freeway, or, you know, whatever it is. We are so truly invested, whether it be in an experience that we once experienced in the past, or it's something that we're experiencing in the present, or something that we wish to experience in the future. It is definitely something that we feel like is quote unquote real life. It's happening. It's tangible. It's physical. It's here. It's in front of us. We can feel it, hear it, smell it, taste it, touch it. So why would there be any reason to question it? Well, there is absolutely reason to question it, because first and foremost, how did it get here in the first place? Number one. Number two, what is the substance that creates creation? It's like, what electromagnetic properties can constitute for, you know, the existence of your atomic structure, of the atomic structure of your being, let alone a reality that's being projected by a consciousness that doesn't even exist in the third dimension. And that's another aspect that's really deep that I love about your book, is you talk about how the mind does not exist in the physical realm, right? That's kind of like one of the main points almost is yes, here we are 3D, you know, I can eat this tasty food, and I can definitely deduce that I don't want to smell, you know, what my dog, you know, does in the backyard or whatever. You know, we can make these deductions and kind of pivot our lives in correspondence to how we feel about, you know, these interactions and experiences that we're having. But at the end of the day, if we were to kind of flip it, just like you said, you know, it's like if we were to look at it inside out instead of, you know, I'm feeling this way, or this person did this to me and I'm feeling down, or blah, blah. And instead, if we went, well, I am actually the reflection of my own universe, I am creator, right? You can focus your energy, like you said, you can put your hands on the wheel essentially and start driving to the exact destination that you choose, as opposed to, you know, being cluttered in traffic and not knowing where to go and constantly, you know, being influenced by other cars. And, you know, obviously that's kind of it's a metaphor. I don't know if it's my best metaphor, but it's a metaphor for understanding, for taking the conscious leap between having your reality affect you versus you affecting your reality. And that brings me to my very first, you could call it topic, you could call it question, very first pool to churn with you, Bruce, is the first chapter in your book, The Geometry Code. First chapter is The Question of Identity, Two Thought Systems. Now, within this chapter contains, of course, sub-chapters, right? We have, what does my identity have to do with geometry? What is the intent here, and what's the point? I absolutely love this, and I can't wait for you to get into this. Another one is examining the why, quote-unquote, first, right? And then we'll get into more, but let's start off with that first. Let's do, why does my identity, or what does my identity have to do with geometry, with sacred geometry? What is the intent here? What's the point? And then examining why, right?
Yeah, and I think the premise that, like, I think I mentioned, in the introductory part of the program that originally this was going to be primarily about geometric symbols that corresponded to Hermetic laws. And then as I got back into the non-dual metaphysics that I was returned to about 8 years ago, I realized, well, that can actually still work, but as a backdrop. And so it's not so much a bait and switch, but basically that the idea of the geometric symbolism, the shapes and the forms that I have been intrigued with for decades, that they have any less interest. But I think that the idea that this could actually be a really practical example of how we can use the mind to look at a class of symbols or a realm of metaphors, yes, and realize that, yes, these can be guideposts or signs along the road that give us clues to which thought system we're thinking within. And that's why I wanted to talk about these two thought systems first, because there's really basically, even though there seems to be countless thought systems, really if you can distill them down to two. One that we hang out in most of the time, which is really the what's in it for me, egoic,
right? The ego mind,
the personal identity that we think of ourselves as a body, and every once in a while we have a persona,
yes,
right?
Like reptilian mind, right?
I mean, it's the Ken Wapnick calls it the need machine, which I think is a fun.
Oh, that really is a wonderful description.
And an amusing definition.
Definitely.
Because it's just this insatiable thing that says, okay, what? How can I get my needs met?
Yes.
And not that we would, want to deprive ourselves of the things that we need for our sustenance and, our finances and having relationships in the world that represent caring and sharing and feeling appreciated and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
It covers a lot of ground. But there's different ways of approaching it. And
absolutely,
the me first approach, I won't mention any names, but you can see it in the political arena at times. So.
Yes, absolutely.
There may be some figures that come to mind, I won't go there at the moment. But just suffice it to say that we're all invested in that thought system, which is why years ago on Merv Griffin's show on TV, this is a few decades ago, he had an Indian holy man, Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who was, teaching transcendental meditation, and he was a guest on his show, and very cordial, and so Merv was talking about the whole political scene at the time. This is, you know, three or four decades ago, something like that.
Right.
And so the audience was chiming in with, you know, this politician is messing this up, and this government system is failing us this way, and so forth and so on. At one point, after there was a lull, the Maharishi, you know, in his very soft-spoken voice, said, "Well, of course, there's really nothing to complain about, because these figures are merely symbols or representatives of our thinking."
Yes.
And the audience was kind of struck dumb. It's like, what?
Right. Like,
now, obviously, on the level of form, you know, you don't want to not hold people accountable that are in public office. I don't think he was recommending that at all. But the more important point, though, I think that he was making, that again is not something that we usually want to look at,
yes,
is that our thoughts reflect one of these two thought systems: one of kindness or one of victimhood. And
yes.
So that's why this personal thought system, if we really honestly look at it, doesn't get us where we want to go.
Absolutely not.
It's seek
limiting,
but do not find thought system.
It's very limiting. You know, there is a ceiling. There is a ceiling to the ego, to the need machine, if you will. You know,
absolutely. In fact, it's bounded in every direction.
Absolutely. But yes, indeed. Yeah.
It gives us little scraps, little crumbs of rewards now and then, just to kind of keep us going. So that we don't, you know, question it too heavily.
Yes.
You know, it's sort of like the Machiavellian tyrannical machine that in our minds that says, yeah, I'll throw you a bone now and then, just, you know, so you'll be, you know, sated, but it never really fulfills us.
Exactly.
And I think that if we can look at what has those characteristics in our lives, we'll realize they're the thoughts that have the identity structure that says, I'm the center of the universe.
Yes.
And this separate self, seemingly separate self,
yes,
is the big deal. It's the origin of my axes, you know, and everything revolves around me, you know, Galileo be damned kind of thing.
Yes.
But that's really, you know, that's, you know, the ego doesn't like the, you know, Copernican and Galilean ideas that maybe this separate self isn't all there is.
Right.
And that's why it's, you know, a me first thought system.
Absolutely.
And so shared interests are a foreign idea. But that's the way out of it. I think that's how we get out of the insanity,
yes,
of a world that's based on everyone for themselves.
Yes.
And if we can look at every opportunity for how can I, not just for some, but how can I at least hold the ideal or the intention and do everything I can to promote having everyone's real needs met. And I put the word adjective real in there because there's a lot of things that we think we need that either could be classified as luxuries or folly, or, you know, if we really examined what's really needed, even on the level of form,
yes,
it's pretty simple. You know, if we really you look at some of the transcendentalists back in the early part of this country, and, you know, the Emersons and the Thoreaus, and I'm thinking of particularly of Walden Pond, you know.
He
gave an example of going off and living in the woods and building a cabin for, you know, a pittance, and just doing a lot of stuff himself. And the self-reliance is one aspect of it, but it's really, I think, recognition that our needs are actually pretty minimal.
Yes.
If we draw upon inner resources.
So true.
But it's not about the external needs of, or, you know, that what we have or don't have in the world. It's really about, again, not making that a specialness idol of either, you know, obscene wealth or obscene poverty.
So true.
Because anything that is comparative is really part of that egoic thought system. Anything that says that there's differences between us ultimately is part of ego's why. The ego, it's ego's, what's that French term, raison d'être, the reason for being. You know?
Yes.
That's basically why ego is insane, is right. that the whole motivation for that insane part of our minds is thinking that somehow, ultimately, we need to conquer the rest of the universe.
So true.
It may not be put in those terms explicitly, and it really would cringe if we exposed it like a cockroach running into the closet door and when the lights turned on. But when we start looking at the egoic mind, it doesn't like to be looked at.
It is so true. It's so focused on judgment, right? It's all about not being judged, or you know what? Even okay, so this is something that I always ponder with my my group of friends, family. You know, we talk about how mainstream media, television, radio, media, right? Uh-huh. Is constantly you watch these commercials, you watch these hair products, you watch the face products, you watch the wrinkle removal, whatever it might be, even something like a back brace, right? And
sure.
Now there's two sides to this. Yes, one is like, yes, of course, you know, this could help, this could genuinely make you feel better because the root of this special plant does something to the elasticity of your skin, therefore giving you a shinier look. Whatever, yes, that very well could occur. But at the same time, when you're watching these commercials and you're seeing the examples of these people that are supposedly supposed to look better than you because you're not using that product, they're basically saying to the ego, right, you are not good enough without this product, right? And it's one after another after another after another after another after another after another after another. And if it's not a shampoo, if it's not like a new form of shampoo that's better for your hair, you know, it's that just makes you feel better, right? And let me say, there's nothing wrong. There's absolutely nothing wrong if you see something that you like and it brings you joy. Oh man, there's nothing wrong with going for it and enjoying it and allowing it to, you know, expand your joy because it smells good and it's activating senses within you that are, you know, triggering happy thoughts, right? There's nothing wrong with that. But just as long as we don't make these things define who we are. Just
Bingo.
As long
Bingo.
As, yeah, thanks, Bruce. Just as long as we can still go on with our daily lives and say, well, I don't need, like, let's say, you know, oh, I didn't use this product today. Okay, that's fine. I'm not going to feel less of a person because I didn't use this or because I'm not driving this car that I think I should be driving. I'm not going to allow myself to feel less of a person, right?
Right.
So it's
exactly.
Like it's using the material things around us to just enhance our experience as opposed to ball and chain us to thinking that we need these things to satisfy the ego.
Right. And actually, you used the word joy, and I was thinking, I've started to adopt the policy of whenever I catch myself relating to something that can change with joy, I reclassify
I like that
as euphoria.
I like that a lot. Yes.
Because euphoria is something that's just like a little blip on the radar, you know, in terms of the cosmic perspective of things.
Yes.
And you know, the popsicle or the sunset or the bonus check or the, you know, whatever it is, whether it's something to do with a relationship or a health regimen or you know, sex, drugs, rock and roll, you know, you didn't mention drugs there. And I was thinking, as you were saying that, you know, hopefully you put in the disclaimer for all of the advertisers and sponsors to turn the channel for a few minutes while we talk about the fact that we don't really need anything.
But, yeah, right. No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
So, okay, now you can start.
But, no, we're enhancing the experience. We're enhancing the experience.
Yeah, right, yeah. You can tune in to get some corporate sponsors. Yeah. But your point's well taken is that, you know, if we can look at the things that come and go as fleeting and then kind of begin to watch that with a sort of an amused smile, an inner smile. It's like, yeah, I can enjoy this, but I know it's not anything that's permanent. It's not going to last.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, there may be something would be considered horrific that happens the next day or the next decade.
Yes.
And but if we label those things as good or bad, I think that's why Shakespeare was such the wise soul, you know, the Edward de Vere, as some suggest, that was the real author of Shakespeare, you know, wrote, penned that, you know, that nothing good or bad, but thinking makes it so.
Right, right.
And but that's our interpretations. But it's all those interpretations that basically take us away from the inclusiveness of our pure awareness.
Absolutely.
And that's the two different whys of the two different thought systems. The ego's why is always to compare, to make different, to divide, to separate, to substitute, to make special, to differentiate. Whereas the self that we all share, which is, I think, why shared interests are so potent, because they lead us away from that debilitating and dysfunctional thought system.
Yes.
That doesn't make us happy in the truly eternal sense of that word.
Exactly.
Because when we start to share interests, we realize, oh yeah, we're all in the same boat. We all have a decision-making mind that chooses between these two thought systems. We have this 100% insane but consistent, and that's why it's so convincing, you know, because the ego's shenanigans, the insanity of the me first thought system. Not only is everyone doing it, I mean, it's like 100% popular. You don't even have to have an election because everybody on the planet does it and is fully invested.
So true.
But there's always this little glimmer of this little still voice, this quiet prompting that keeps suggesting, well, maybe there's a better way. Maybe there's another way of looking at the world where instead of, you know, we blow everyone up to get our personal needs met, or maybe more politically and socially acceptable mechanisms, but achieving the same result. Maybe there's a mechanism or a way of being, a way of thinking, a way of directing our awareness to where we realize that we can actually see everyone's interest as our own.
It's so true.
And ultimately, you know, to see everyone as ourselves, but the training wheel, I think, idea, the intermediate step, if you will, is to look at everyone in our lives as a symbol or as an emissary of something that's in our unconscious mind that we can look at and reintegrate.
So true.
Return us back to the oneness that we never left. And I think that's where the sacredness comes in. And that's the third subtopic in this chapter.
Yes.
It's an all or nothing pair of thought systems.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
The ego thought system, if you zoom out from the little self that we think we are, I love the Dr. Seuss movie, Horton Hears a Who. Which I happen to stumble across.
As do I. It's the perfect metaphor. I mean,
yeah,
really.
It is. I mean, because really here's this elephant that's just, you know, moseying along, and this little speck of dust floats by. And it just happens to be just right at the right spot next to its ear as it floats by, the speck of dust, where the elephant thinks, well, maybe I think I heard a call for help there.
Yes, yes.
And yet it's this infinitesimal little speck, but it was just at the right spot where the sound was able to carry, and there was you know, a moment of calm, I guess, or something, where the elephant could actually hear this little speck. And it turns out when you zoom way in on this speck, it's this entire planet.
Exactly.
It's called Whoville, you know, and all these little who people, you know, the who's that we think we are.
Yeah, it's so true.
And from that, you know, from that little tiny perspective, that this self that thinks it's separate from the rest of the universe, which the Eastern mystics and modern physicists both have suggested maybe not a valid, you know, or certainly an incomplete approach to looking at life.
Yes,
that, you know, maybe, you know, if everything's interconnected and there's a relationship between everything, then maybe the Whoville reality that is the the really a nothing reality.
Yeah.
Is we're calling out from that, trying to remember
totally.
This inclusive self that we are that really includes everything.
Totally. Totally.
And I think that is also a hugely helpful and also immensely difficult challenge.
Oh, without a doubt.
To remember to include everything and everyone. Because if we leave anything out, we're saying that duality, which is the ego's thought system, is valid. We're saying, okay, I give up. And to be gentle with ourselves when we catch ourselves doing that, is when we say, yeah, I want, you know, peace for the planet, except for maybe this group and that group and maybe those three people over there.
Right.
You know? And you know, it could be a political party or figure. It could be, you know, a religious, you know, fanatical group or
right.
not so fanatical group.
Exactly.
Or it could be you know, some corporation that is doing something that we don't like.
Exactly.
Or it could
exactly.
be, you know, some practice that is widely, you know, practice that we have, you
would
know,
rather,
our grievances about.
Yes.
Anything that upsets us.
So true.
It doesn't mean that we just stop being activists for the causes that we in our hearts feel we can, you know, make a kind-hearted difference in the world.
Right, right.
But if we, you know, start dividing people into we and they again, then we got to step back and say,
so
wait
true.
A minute, am I just, you know, destroying the very foundation upon which I'm trying to achieve the results of.
Yes. It's yeah. like it's like it's the power of paradox. It is such like a paradoxical idea to think that, like, here we are, you know, judging. I mean, that, you know, we almost inherently judge. It's almost like
right.
like
oh, part, I think you could remove the word almost.
Yeah, sir. We do inherently judge. You're absolutely right. And I would say it could be, you know, and this is also a psychological debate, right? It could be, you know, within our DNA, right? Fight or flight, to judge something to save your life. You know, you see like a saber-toothed tiger and you say, well, I should probably, you know, either grab my spear or run as quickly as I can the other direction, right? Or it's something that, you know, as time has gone on, as evolution has occurred, as possible, you know, DNA manipulation, you know, that's for another show, has occurred, whatever happened, you know, we could very well, you know, jump from that instinctual judgment to having a little bit more selective judgment, where it doesn't so much mean life or death in the things that we're judging. It's more of, do I, you know, does this suit me right now? Or does, you know, how do I feel about this right now? Or how do I, you know, so it's kind of like on a moment to moment, basis, whereas, and there's so much more to choose from in today's world. I mean, we have an economy, we have a monetary system, we have, you know, inflation, we have we have everything, yet anything and everything that you like want available to you, we pretty much have it. And then, you know, the things that are on the leading edge, that obviously, you know, secret, you know, very high class secret groups know about, or technologies that have already been created that are present on the planet, just not available to the public, like whatever it is, it's there, it's out there, it exists. But the question is, do you vibrate to it if you want it? Do you vibe to it? If so, just put yourself there, become it. And just like you said, Bruce, the separation factor, right? It's the idea of the idea of taking responsibility
right.
for everything and everybody in your reality.
Yes.
It's like each person is a reflection of a concept of you. Just think about, like, you know, your mind in this consciousness that does not exist in the third dimension. This consciousness that exists in In the universe, it exists in source. It exists in vibrating potential of whatever you choose for it to exist. At least that's kind of my understanding of it to this day, and I'm sure that it will expand as time goes on. But it's you know, we go on these rants. It's just like you become what you focus on, you know, and that's all that there is. That's why when you think of a family member or friend that you haven't talked to in 10 years, you just think of them, or, you know, they come to your mind and then they call 5 minutes later or a day later. That's not random. That's vibrational alignment. That's
exactly, you know, and every single person that enters our life from the most, high longevity relationships, like family members that, you know, we literally know our entire lives, or, you know, people that we just see for 5 seconds at a grocery store, you know, in a crowd,
yes,
concert or something.
Yes,
it doesn't matter, because each of them represents an opportunity to choose, again, one of those two thought systems of inclusion or exclusion. And if the way we see other people is how we see ourselves,
bam.
So that's so that's where the awesome responsibility comes in. Yes. A moment ago you said something that reminded me of a favorite mathematical pun that I like to use whenever I am mindful enough to remember it, which is that basically cuts our work in half, because here's the numeric pun is we're not responsible for everyone else, but we can be responsible to everyone else.
Yes.
So there's half as much effort.
Yes.
And ultimately, yes, if we allow ourselves to trust our inspiration, we don't even have to, you know, do that other half. We basically can get the heck out of the way.
Exactly.
And our transpersonal self, if you will, the one that our egos doesn't have a clue about, but we all have access to that at every given moment.
Yes.
That awareness then, get our ego's judgments and condemnations and criticisms out of the way, it doesn't mean that we don't, you know, recognize facts. We can say, you know, this person is in this political party and their campaign has, amassed this number of dollars from this number of people. You know, those are facts.
Right, right.
But the judgments and the condemnations that we make and the interpretations about every single thing in our lives, I just picked one as an example there, are the things that condemn us. And we're condemned by our condemnations. That's how it works out. And that's the perfect mathematical identity that we get to choose moment to moment.
Yes.
And the beauty of it is once we see that letting other people off the hook, not on the level of form, you know, if somebody's committing a crime, they probably should, you know, have the appropriate justice taken care of.
Of course.
But in terms of condemning the person, condemning the spirit or the individual, and recognizing that we all have the same essence, even though the form is dramatically different in most every case, that is very liberating, because that frees us up to choose the one thing that makes a difference, which is that inner guide, that inner kindness teacher that lets everyone off the hook in terms of the spirit of what we are. And that we kind of get not only does this transpersonal awareness have a completely inclusive perspective, but it also is a completely innocent perspective, in the sense that if we can see what we're doing here is like a massive virtual reality play, a drama, a dream, really, then the consequences of all the things that happen in the cosmic scheme of things are irrelevant to the spirit that we have that's immortal.
Yes.
And if that's true, then we can afford, from that perspective, from above that battleground, if you will, of duality, of the duality of space, the duality of time, and the duality of these finite creatures that we think we are, from that perspective, we can afford to forgive ourselves for making up those projections, because then we see that not only is there nobody out there, that they're reflections of my mind.
Yes. Yes.
But nothing happened. From an eternal perspective, all the things that have happened in the century leading up to this one, and then in the next century and in the present moment, are not even a blip on the radar of eternity.
It's so true. It's so
and,
true.
And then on the cosmic mapping, you know, if you look, try to find the galaxy and even the local galactic cluster in an astronomer's map, you might have to use a magnifying glass, and that's our galaxy.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, and then how many more orders of magnitude do you have to zoom down to get to our little Whoville,
right,
you know,
right.
planet? Let alone the neighborhood that we think we live in.
It's so true. You know, Bruce, something with the last 5 minutes of our show, something that I wanted to touch on, which came to my mind earlier when you mentioned Whoville being literally a perfect description, and Horton Hears a Who. So there is this one scene, for those of you that have not seen Whoville, and for those of you Horton Hears a Who, for those of you that haven't seen it, and for those of you that have, you'll know what scene I'm referring to. Well, there's a scene where, Horton, after a series of events, loses, Whoville loses his... dandelion, right? The pink,
uh-huh.
the pink dandelion. Well, it falls into this field of what looks like infinite dandelions. It uh-huh. falls into this field of just pink. It just looks like a pink sea of
yes.
each being an individual dandelion.
I'd forgotten about that part. Yes, that's a good metaphor, isn't it?
So it's kind of like, you know, here's, and then, well, so he gets so attached to these people, they need help in this little dandelion, world. He loses them, gets attached to them, and goes through almost every single, in comparison would be, quintillions, sextillions of dandelions if you were to actually compare what Horton, would be going through in comparison to planets or galaxies if the galaxies represented dandelions in the movie.
Uh-huh.
He goes through all these different dandelions to find life on the one that was there, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, from our perception, each and every single one of those dandelions that he's going through could potentially have another Horton planet on it,
right,
so
right.
And what one last thing is, which I thought was pretty interesting, is number one, Dr. Seuss was definitely a doctor. Well, let's say that he understood. He was a doctor of quantum physics. In The Grinch, they live on a snowflake in the same exact idea. At the very end, it zooms out and it's one snowflake falling, uh-huh. With trillions of other snowflakes, and it's just like, if only we knew, we cannot be, as Rumi, I'm going to quote Rumi again, right? We cannot be, this part is my part, but we can't be, and then here's Rumi's part, just one drop. We are not one drop in an entire ocean, but the entire ocean in one drop. There is
exactly.
so much in the universe that we can't be just one drop in an entire ocean. We have to be the whole thing encompassed in one little expression. We just have to be, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and that's really the non-dual metaphysics that we've been talking about, is that our awareness is everyone's awareness.
Yes.
The
yes.
truth of it. Not the forms that change and vary and come and go, but the truth of the awareness that we really are and have and eternally is outside space and time. It's beyond space and time.
Yes.
And it
yes.
encompasses that in the same way that Horton is, dwarfs the little Whoville planet that we think we live on.
Yes. Yes. No, it's so true. And it's just, it's fascinating to say the least. It is who, man, this is just why I love you, Bruce. This is why I love having you on the show. To wrap this up, I just, every single time you know, we talk, you come on the show, you just, you expand my mind. I know you expand the listeners' minds. I get emails, I get many, many emails after every single one of our shows saying, you know, thank you, Bruce, thank you, Dave, for spreading the knowledge that you're spreading, because, Bruce, with the knowledge that you have instilled upon us, you know, you and you being everyone can literally pivot your consciousness to be, do, and have anything you can imagine in the universe. And I guess, you know, at the end of the day, we are just looking for that ecstasy. We are looking for that, you know, as you said, instead of joy, it's ecstatic. You know, we are that and we can be that, but sometimes we get the flame can sometimes be dulled from a misunderstanding of our place in the universe. So
yeah, it's when we invest our identity in the finite. And if I could, I could close with this little Shakespeare quote.
Please.
That I think really talks about the ego's life and how unfulfilling that really is. But the alternative is unimaginably great. Anyway, like William Shakespeare says, life's but a walking shadow, a poor player
yes.
that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing.
Absolutely beautiful.
So I think it's good to not take our little lives too seriously. And that really is incredibly liberating when that really I think tunes us into that thought system of inclusion that I have a whole table in that first chapter, which is also on the Geometry Code, and you can download the whole first chapter even if you don't have the book, and people might want to enjoy that and have fun with that. So
absolutely Bruce, first and foremost, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, David.
We love you with all of our hearts. The listeners love you with all of their hearts, and you know, we look forward to the Sundays of the month that we get to hear the knowledge that you have to spread. And listeners, make sure to check out The Geometry Code by Bruce Rawls, right? You can check that out, obviously, thegeometrycode.com. Make sure to check out brucerawls.com as well, and ACIM blog as well. That's right, ACIM, right? Perfect, thank you. I always do the MIIM. No, it's ACIM blog.com. And of course, follow us here on Good Vibes Station. That's at Good Vibes Station on Twitter. We love you guys with all of our hearts. All the unconditional love, light, happiness, joy, and laughter from ourselves to yours. Thank you guys so much, and we'll see you next Sunday. Love you, Bruce.
Thanks,
you,
David.
Brother.
Likewise.
See you guys soon. Bye-bye.